I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Tommy Ogden. He is the co-founder. He's also the agility and analytics lead at Activera Consulting. It's a boutique management consulting firm based in Houston, Texas, focused on the future of energy. This is not his first rodeo. He started one with some buddies. It got acquired by Accenture. And at some point they decided, you know what? There's something about small that we prefer over big. And that was the beginning of Activera. And so looking forward to learning more from Tommy. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Craig. Really appreciate you inviting me on.
Thank you. So when we were talking, you know, it's really interesting when people are breaking in, you know, when they're starting their careers, they end up doing all sorts of interesting jobs. I mean, at one point, there was one time I had a part-time job as a janitor just because, you know, I needed money.
Sure.
I think you had a side hustle that was a lot more interesting than picking up other people's crap. But in some ways it was picking up other people's crap. What did you do?
Oh, you got it. And there was a lot of crap to go around, let me tell you. So I did have a full-time job. I was a financial analyst with a heating and air conditioning manufacturer at the time. But in order to make extra money, like you mentioned, I was working a side hustle on the weekends for a local TV station in town in Houston, Texas. And essentially what they were filming was those judge shows, right? Similar to a Judge Judy. And so my role was to actually go pick up plaintiffs and defendants from the airport, drop them off so that they could do their filming of this judge show, and then take them back to the airport. And so you can imagine in certain instances, if people lost their case, they weren't so happy to get back into the car with me. And we'll just leave it at that. But a very interesting thing that happened to me while I was working that side hustle was someone came up with this idea. It was back in 2010. They were going to rent out the football stadium here in Houston, the really big one. And they were going to have a soccer competition. It was called the Free Kick Masters. And they were going to invite international soccer stars from all over the world to participate here. The prize for the best striker was $1 million. And wow, the prize for the best goalkeeper was $500,000. So it actually drew a lot of really top name talent. And logistically, in order to make that happen, he needed drivers to go and pick up people from the airport, drop them off at the hotel. And so he tapped this studio that I just happened to be driving for at the time. And I haven't mentioned it yet, but in my undergraduate, I actually majored in Spanish, and I took Portuguese, and I took French, and I was really big on the Romance languages. And so I was sort of a hot commodity when it came to drivers and being able to pick up all these international soccer stars. So, you know, my claim to fame is at 6 a.m. one Monday morning, in a minivan, I show up to Bush Intercontinental Airport in Houston, and I pick up Lionel Messi from the airport, him and his cadre of folks. To be fair, he wasn't that talkative. I think he had taken the red eye flight from Argentina. But, you know, we were able to converse a little bit. He did end up signing my shirt at the time. And I had a lot of interactions that week. And I took Ronaldinho, who is a big Brazilian soccer star, back to the airport. I engaged with Rafa Marquez, one of the big Mexican soccer stars. And, you know, overall, it was a very interesting and tiring weekend.
Wow. Yeah. What you know, in the course of doing that job, driving all these people around, what would you say is the biggest thing you learned? Something that would surprise people. What was something you learned that caught you by surprise?
So I would say both from a positive and a negative perspective. I would say from the positive side, people are generally pretty humble, right? I mean, the folks that I were engaging with and that I was taking back and forth, they would talk to you, right? They weren't above you. I think there's a leadership lesson there around how you work together with a team. In this case, for them, it would be a sports team, right? It probably doesn't behoove them to be this, non-humble super soccer star because they've got to pass with other people and they have to support them and they need their teammates to support them in turn. And so I was actually surprised by the humbleness and the ability that these folks had to engage on a personal level with just, general Joe Schmo. So I would say that would be a positive thing I learned. The negative thing I would say is honestly the individual I had mentioned previously who had this idea and kicked it off. Well, after the show was over, we worked our tail off that entire weekend, and we weren't the only ones. I mean, to put something together like that, you've got logistic crews all over the place. Well, unfortunately, in this case, there was a failure to pay all of these
Oh.
contractors. Luckily, the studio that I was working with had a bit more clout behind them and put some pressure on the guy to get the drivers paid. But not everybody was so lucky. And so there were a lot of delinquent payments, and I think there were civil court cases afterwards, et cetera. And so that would be the anti-leadership example of, actually taking care of the people that are working with you and for you. And so I saw the negative side of the house there as well. So two sides of a coin.
It's that is something that's really interesting because presumably whoever put that on would look to put on things in the future. And it seem at least to me, it seems very short-sighted, to stiff people on this job. Because if you develop that reputation, then it just becomes really, really hard.
Absolutely. And let me tell you, Craig, it never happened again. That was the one and only Kickmasters.
Yeah. Well, and we were talking a little bit about my history. I told you I had freelancers that were reaching out to my team when I was in a coma in the hospital. And the what I would say is I decided years ago about how I would treat freelancers, and I had a specific strategy that recognized the day was coming when labor would be scarce. Labor was abundant at the time. I was like, this will not last forever. Labor will be scarce again. And so, what am I going to do to make sure they return my calls when I need them? And it's a shame that this fella who put on that event didn't think that way. I think that's a losing mentality.
Completely agree.
Yeah. So, you were, so during the week, you were doing financial analysis for, what'd you say, HVAC?
Yeah, exactly. Heating and air conditioning manufacturer. Yep.
Oh, wow. I mean, so what does that mean? Financial analytics, what does that mean in lay language?
I know that can be like it's very wide ranging and variable where that can go. So essentially, the company I worked for, they built these air conditioning systems, and they had dealers all over the country, in I think 40 different states. And what I was doing in the finance department was the air conditioning manufacturing company would have a rebate program so that if a dealer sold X amount of equipment in a month, then they could apply for sort of a volume discount, if you will, post sale. And then the company, the manufacturing company, would then rebate that dealer a certain amount of money based on the volume that went through that dealer. And I was responsible for managing the relationships with those 40 different vendors, gathering up all of the information around their sales for the month, and then determining what the rebate was that the manufacturing company would pay them.
Okay, that's cool. So how did you get into consulting?
Sure. Yes. So I was a career switcher. What I just described to you did not jive with my undergraduate degrees, which I mentioned earlier around Spanish and Portuguese and French. So unfortunately, though I was good at my job, I kept getting passed over for promotions by folks who had a financial background, right? Yeah. Folks who had majored in finance or had masters in finance. And, you know, to be honest, it wasn't really my passion. And so I was thinking, what am I going to do? Right. I can't do much with a Spanish degree. I can maybe go into teaching, maybe go into the United Nations, but I need to do something else. I need to figure something else out. And at that time, I also got engaged to my now wife. And so, you know, talk about epiphanies that you have from experiences in your life. I was thinking, my gosh, how can I support this woman and a future family as a financial analyst? And so it really got me thinking I should probably go back to school. And so I did that. I actually did a dual degree program. So an MBA at University of Houston, and then an MGM, which is a Master of Global Management from the Thunderbird School of International Management out in Phoenix, Arizona. And that allowed me to not only find my passion of consulting, but it also allowed me to take my previous passions around languages and international cultures and incorporate those into business. And so I really changed my entire career trajectory by going back to school. And once I found consulting and I realized, hey, you can go in, you can work with a team of people, you can solve problems, you can help folks, not only personally, but professionally. That was it. That was it for me. And so I focused everything I had in consulting. I got consulting certificates. I took consulting courses where you actually worked with folks in the university ecosystem and companies within the city to solve problems for them. And then right out of school, I went straight into a boutique management consulting firm and never looked back.
And so, I mean, consulting is a big area. So when you were consulting, how were you helping people? What was the nature of what you were doing?
Sure. So the big companies that, you know, you talk about Accentures and the Deloittes, the KPMGs, and, you know, the list goes on and on. They do a bit of everything. Right. I mean, they do all different industries and they'll do, you know, project management and change management and strategy and operations and analytics, and they just do everything. When you talk about a boutique management consulting firm, there's a focus there. And our focus has always been IT advisory for the energy industry. And so a lot of our experience of those co-founders is in that realm. Most of us are Houston based, and it's the, you know, the world oil and gas capital. Mm-hmm. So a lot of our clients are here, and that's just really where we've built up our network. So for us, it's IT advisory. When you hear IT consulting, sometimes you think, you know, networking and infrastructure and, hey, can you fix my laptop? That's not really what we do. It's more of going to like the chief technical officer or the chief information officer or the chief data officer, and that individual will have a number of different projects and programs running to progress the company, and we would help make those successful and accelerate the business outcomes.
Okay. What's an example of a project that you'd have underway?
Yeah, sure. So one of the main things that we do is a merger integration. So perhaps you've seen I know you're in Austin, I'm sure you get some news related to the energy industry. You've seen a lot of M&A, right? So people, Exxon's buying a company and Chevron's buying a company, and companies are either being acquired or merging together so that they're a bigger company, right? After that happens, you essentially have two separate technological ecosystems that need to be intertwined somehow without any disruption to the business and with the fastest adoption rate possible. And so that's what we would help with. That's one example, right? So we would come in after the announcement has been made. There's a bunch of pre-day one activities around how's the project team going to look like? What is the governance structure? What about a due diligence checklist and assessment of both of the systems? Then there would be a execution phase, right, where you're actually trying to run the projects to merge the different IT systems. And then there would be sort of a handover to operations with rationalization of the different applications and just making sure that there's longevity and sustainability between the new company.
Got it. So that obviously ran pretty well. And then what, Accenture acquired you guys?
Yeah, surprise out of the blue. Congratulations, Accenture's taking you on. So that was a bit of a change going from a 100-person firm is what we were at the time of the acquisition to, I believe, I looked just a couple weeks ago and they were at 743,000 people at Accenture all over the world. And interestingly, I told you these big firms do everything. Well, you know the Netflix show Stranger Things?
Yes.
Yes. So Accenture actually did the visual effects for Stranger Things. They have a whole department that's just dedicated to visual effects. Now, you think of Accenture and consulting, and that's probably the last thing on your mind. But as you mentioned previously, consulting is so varied and wide-ranging. There's lots of different types and flavors of it. So that's just to give you an example of what we were walking into, right? This giant behemoth of a company with tentacles all over the world. It's a very different feel than that smaller boutique sort of culture and community and camaraderie that exists at that smaller firm. And so, we did it. People went different directions. Some stayed at Accenture, some went back to boutiques, some went into independent consulting, some went into industry and joined some of our clients. People took different paths, but I always had this sort of entrepreneurial spirit or mind where I wanted to do that. I wanted to contribute in that way. And it never really left me. It was always just a, hey, when is the opportunity going to come along? And after spending a few years at Accenture, realized I think this is the right time. Let's do it. So that's that was the shift to small to big and back to an entrepreneurial small organization.
And I imagine there's someone out there listening that's like been waiting for the day that they would get hired by Accenture.
Sure.
And, because it's a huge name, it's a nice thing to have on your resume, but one your thing.
Yeah, and I can tell you that I was that person.
Yeah.
In fact, just candidly, when I was graduating business school, Accenture is one of the places I applied, and I didn't get in, right? I was denied. And so I was actually really wanting to join that company. And tell the truth, there's a lot of really good things about that company. I mean, I loved the smart people that I worked with. I was doing challenging work. I can say a whole lot of positives about that. And like you said, for certain people, that could be their grail, right? And that's what they want to do, and that's where they want to be. People spend their entire careers at Accenture and they love it, right? But for everybody, it's different. And I did a little bit of soul searching towards the end of my tenure there, and thought about what do I want to do? I've got 25 years left, let's say, in my career. Do I want to pound the pavement as an Accenture company man for the next 25 years? I personally didn't, right? Do I want to go into industry? I had been working with one client for literally a decade. I could probably have gotten a job there, but I knew what that was. That was comfortable, right? That was a known entity. There's something about waking up every day and being excited about going to work. And when I thought about that and how much excitement I felt internally in this idea of starting my own thing or co-founding it at least, I couldn't say no. I couldn't say no. And so everybody's got to figure that out for themselves about what gets them excited. And in my case, you're right. It wasn't working for a big company.
Now, one thing that you said was, if I heard you correctly, so there was 100 of you that got acquired by Accenture, and sound like a fair number of people didn't stay for the long haul. And that's something that I've seen. I've been through an M&A. I lasted, I think, 3 months. Had to push a really big check back across the table. And doing M&As is hard. And so if I think about the listeners, Accenture isn't listening to this podcast, but there's business owners who are looking at growing their mid-sized business and considering a, M&A to do that. I've seen so many times they just don't work out. I think the majority of times they don't work out. Why do you think that is?
It could be either from the strategic side or from the tactical. And so, strategic wise, you're trying to make a good decision about if we acquire this company, how is it going to supplement our current portfolio, right? That would be one of the strategic concerns for oil and gas companies, right? They're looking at acreage. So we think, shale is really big out in the Permian Basin and Midland, Texas, right out there. What can we do to increase our acreage so that we've got a larger footprint and we can produce more oil and gas, right? That might be one of the strategic ideas they have around acquiring a company. And that may be based off of a number of different variables, including the future price of oil and gas, the operational efficiencies that you gain from bringing these two companies together, right? Maybe one has a really good drilling and completions practice, and the other one has a good land management practice, let's say. And if we could bring those two together, then, it's going to be amazing. So there could be missteps from the strategic perspective. Maybe COVID happens and oil prices hit negative $40 a barrel, right? And you didn't see that one coming. And so from a strategic side, maybe it was the wrong acquisition. That could be one thing that happens. But also from a tactical implementation side, now we talked through just briefly some of the execution things that you would do to put systems together. Well, it's not just systems. There's processes and there's people, right? There's technology involved. If you're not incorporating those things effectively, then you can see a delay in the value that you're expecting, and it could be considered a negative thing that you acquired this company. So I think there's just too many variables and facets to make a determination as to why something would fail versus not, because it could come from so many different directions.
One of the challenges that I see, I'm technically a consultant. I'm a fractional CMO. And one of the challenges that consultants have is going into someone else's company and leading, providing leadership within someone else's company. And I think that's a potential minefield. Have you run into that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you say minefield, what I hear is politics. Because, especially if you're consulting for big organizations, but it could be small ones and, nepotism maybe from like a family house. But in these really big organizations, right, you do have those political minefields, and it does behoove you to come in and sort of get your context. Right, get the lay of the land. Where are we in this organizational hierarchy? Who are the stakeholders that could potentially torpedo our initiative, right? And how do we get in front of them early and get early feedback so that we're incorporating that feedback into whatever project we're progressing, so that they don't become detractors later on, right? Like, oh, you didn't consult me, and I'm never going to use this. And people can torpedo things. We've seen it time and time again. So I think one of the ways that you can lead is by proving the value to your client of doing a good sort of stakeholder analysis, stakeholder engagement model, and a communication plan, which we wrap into what we call change management as a whole, as a practice. And doing that effectively can identify some of those potholes that leader might fall into. And at the end of the day, we want them to be successful. That's how we lead, right? We want them to be successful professionally, as in have a successful project. But then what does that result in? Typically a promotion or visibility, right? And that can help their own personal goals for their career. And so we want to make our clients look good. And by leading by example, we can do that most effectively, right? So we've got a set of tools. A set of skills that we utilize to help our clients look good, and really do that lead by example.
And I think there's something really key in there of making the clients look good. When I run into people that in their marketing, they try to make themselves look smart. And I'm like, no. Your goal is to make your buyer, your customer look smart.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you have any practical tips for how to do that for somebody who's going in and providing consulting to another company?
Sure. So I'll say a couple things. I'll give you a tip from my own experience, but I'll also talk to you about the trust equation, which is a big thing in a book for consultants called The Trusted Advisor by Maester. So first is the tip. I've come up through organized sport. I played rugby for 15 years. I played American football before that for about six. And one of the things I've learned is you are working as a team to accomplish a goal, right? And in certain instances, you just need to step in and do what needs to be done for the team in that moment, right? Forget about your role, forget about the expectations. If you see something is amiss or you see something that needs to be done, really just stepping up for the team and pushing it across the line. And I would say as a consultant, being team oriented and team minded is incredibly important, right? You shouldn't be above mopping the floor if that's what the team needs. If you see a spill in the kitchen floor and you see a mop next to it, you're worried a teammate might come in and slip, grab the mop and mop it up. If the team is lagging because there's a huge deadline and everybody needs coffee, run down the street and pick up a bunch of coffees for the team. I've run across too many people in my career that are, director levels or partner levels, and they're just not willing to go down to the level of an underling to go get coffee or to mop the floor or do what the team needs to be done. They play their role, and that's where they stay. And nobody likes that person, right? They may do well in their career. They may sell a bunch of work and make a lot of money, but they're not going to be respected by their peers and their team members. So I would say stay humble, like we talked about with Messi and those other soccer stars, and just make sure that you're being a really good teammate or a good lab partner. So that would be my tip. Now, as it relates to the trusted advisor comment, it goes to what you were saying about self-orientation. So in consulting, we have this equation where the numerator is credibility, reliability, and intimacy. Okay. So credibility is, are you good at something? Are you a subject matter expert, right? I was talking about merger integration earlier, right? Are we credible in that space? Am I, as a consultant, credible? Can I talk about it? Do I understand the intricacies of it, right? Am I credible? Am I reliable is do I do what I say I'm going to do? Do I meet deadlines? Do I consistently have high quality? Am I a reliable consultant? And then intimacy is all about getting on that personal level, understanding the context that we were talking about earlier, and how an individual will benefit, your client will benefit from something like a successful project. Okay. Those are the things that you want to maximize in the numerator. The denominator of that equation is self-orientation. So if you're really credible and you're really reliable and you have great intimacy with the client, but you have super high self-orientation, you've just reduced your equation, right? Because you've got a really high number in the denominator. What you want to do is maximize those things in the numerator and have no self-orientation. And then from that equation, you are considered a better trusted partner from a client. And so that's really an equation that we take to heart, not only at Activera, but I think in consulting generally. That should take that to heart and do the best things that you can to maximize the numerator and reduce the denominator.
That's very clever. That's very smart. And I love how you brought it around back to the beginning, Massey, just having that humble
Right.
spirit and the because those are the people that you want to be around. I always think about Phil Jackson when he had both Michael Jordan and Dennis Rodman on the team. I
Sure.
was like, whatever they're paying him, it's not enough to get these guys to play together. Although Jordan, I think, generally was better at it. It was more of how do you integrate Rodman in that team.
Right.
But that's really sage wisdom, Tommy, and I appreciate you bringing it to leaders and legacies. If people want to reach out and contact you, what's the best way?
Sure. So we have activeraconsulting.com, very easy to Google. But for me personally, I'm linkedin.com/Tommy Ogden, also fairly simple to find.
Excellent. Well, I do hope people reach out to you. Tommy, thanks for being on Leaders and Legacies.
Thank you, Craig. Have a good day.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.